Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and today I have a treat for you. I have actual car guys that are here that know way more about cars than I would probably ever know in my whole entire life. I have Jim Remlinger and Jimmy Remlinger Jr. here on the cast with me tonight, and we are going to be having ourselves some Michelob Golden and some Amber Bock by Michelob as well. So welcome to the cast, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Now, you brought us kind of a treat here. We have some cups that will be in what's coming up next week, or at the end of this week, are the Remlinger Collector Auction Car Cups. And we're going to drink out of these, is that correct?
Yep.
All right. So let's crack a beer then. What kind do you want? Do you want the Amber Bock or I have the Mick Golden Light?
I'll take the Amber Bock.
All right. We'll get you the Amber Bock then. Jimmy, what do you want?
I'll take the light.
You take the light?
Yeah.
There you go. I don't even know. Do you crack these with hand or?
It should be able to.
Sure do.
Yep.
There you go. And these are bottomless cups, right?
Yep. You bet.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you for bringing them on too. So those who are watching, just a little background. The garage that we're at that you've been watching for the last 6 months was actually owned by these two gentlemen right here prior to us owning it. And you guys did a lot of the work in here, specifically that bar in the background, which is kind of a staple that people can see, and kind of a little bit of the background of the Brews and Crews podcast. You guys acquired this in what year?
Wow, let's see. We had it probably, 4 or 5 years?
I'd say 4 years before.
4 years before.
So that's like 2013, because we probably got it in 17, I believe.
Yeah, probably about 2013.
Yeah.
And then half the neons in here we purchased from you, and then half of them we purchased from you.
You're right.
Yep.
But then there are a little different ones as well and some updated ones. So for those who are watching, these gentlemen are the ones that owned it prior to us. And now we've taken over, and you guys have something beyond crazy, I always think. Because when I tell people, they say, oh, this place is amazing. I go, yeah, it's amazing, but you should see what the guys that we bought this from have now.
And we're running out of room.
And you're running out of room. How many square feet was that place anyway?
30,000 square feet.
30,000? Yeah. Okay, so this one's only, I think, about 10,000.
With about 4 acres.
Wow, yeah, and now you guys are running an auction out of there, which we're going to get into later. But I kind of want to get a little background about both of you guys because I think it's kind of fascinating. Your father-son duo, just like my dad and I with the real estate thing, but you guys are more into the whole car situation. So, Jim, I'm going to go with you first since you're the older of the two. How did you get, where did you get your love for cars?
Well, I monkeyed around. You know, I tell everybody it started out with model cars. I used to put model cars together and kind of liked the way they looked. And then as I got a little bit older and started driving around because we lived outside the city. So I was driving probably when I was 14 up and down the road.
Sure.
And then when I got about 15 or 16 and I bought an old 46 coupe actually and started playing around with that. And kind of went from there, just kept in the cars.
Just kept building up. So the cars you're talking about, those little hobby cars you would build? Like
little model cars.
Yeah.
Plastic model cars,
yep.
Right?
Yep. And then you got into bigger and better things. And then, Jimmy, you just kind of followed along as you were younger, or how'd you?
Yeah, I pretty much hung out at the shop since I was
10, 12
tall
years
enough
old
to get lacquer thinner in my eyes from the barrel. I basically started, he had a 66 Charger that was out back of the garage that sat out there forever. We used to build forts in it, and all the seats would lay down, so we'd have the car from front to back, and it was a really good fort. And that was probably, 11 or 12 when we hauled that in?
Yep.
And I talked him into pulling it in the shop and giving me a corner in there, and then about 12 years old, I just started tearing it apart.
Scraping undercoating out from underneath it and put it on barrels. The wife and the girls' daughters, they would go to shopping, and he'd stay at the shop and work all weekend and play around the car.
So did you go to school for this then, Jimmy, at
no.
all? No. You just learned it all on your own?
No. So, yeah, I worked on that car for a while. I had it ready when I was 16 years old. He had that car when he was 16. And then I ended up, we still have it today.
Yeah, we still got
still
the
have
car.
It in the,
is it in the museum?
No, it's in the storage building.
Yeah. Oh, is it completely redone then, or...?
I had it all done, and then we took it to the Mopar Nationals, and then there were some trends going on then in the early 90s
okay.
when we took it, and So I came back and I tore it all back apart again to
it didn't have 5 miles on it
because he didn't have, follow the trend.
And he didn't have license yet, so all he was doing was driving around the fairgrounds with it because you know,
sure.
he didn't need license.
Right.
And then come back home. I mean, we had brand new motor, brand new interior, everything was brand new paint job. Brought it home and tore it all completely apart, and it's still in that spot.
It's still in the spot.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting then. So you just kind of learned it just by tinkering around, basically, just like you did with model cars.
Yep.
So now now the one thing I know about you guys, and if you look in the background for those who are watching, I had to put the Challenger up back because you guys are Mopar guys.
Yes.
Where does that come from? Is it just
you? How to get Mopars?
Yeah.
Everybody asked me that. Well, first of all, I quit school when I was 15.
Perfect. Why?
Because I did not like school.
Okay.
In fact, my last day of school, I was down in the office, and the principal says, "Now what's your problem?" Well, I says, "First of all, I don't like your teachers, I don't like your lunch program, and I don't like you." So I said, "I don't want to be here."
Sure.
He says, "You're only 15. I was in first quarter of ninth grade. And he said, "Well, you're too young to quit." Well, I said, "Something's got to happen because I ain't going. I wouldn't take a pen or paper to class or anything. I failed gym class. I wouldn't take my tennis shoes or nothing." And so I finally got my mom and dad to sign me out. They didn't like it at first, but I says, I'm done.
Sure.
And so they signed me out, and then I moved to Chicago and lived with my grandma.
Okay.
And this is how I'm getting to how we got into the Mopars.
Okay.
We only lived about 6 blocks from Mr. Norm, was the high-performance Dodge
dealer
in the country. So we're about 6 blocks from there, and I would go up there and hang out and sit in the garage, and he'd let all young kids come in and watch to build cars. Or,
sure.
Because he sold nothing but all race cars and high-performance cars. So the 64 Dodge was the big car back in our neighborhood. There was a 64 Dodge aluminum front car, black one. I remember the car. And the guy would run it up and down the streets and just tear the streets all up in the neighborhood. And I always said, when I get old enough and got money, I'm buying me a 64 Dodge. Well, I think at one time we had about four of them.
Yeah.
So you did that times four.
Yeah. So we had the Hemi one, and I think we had three Max Wedge cars.
Yeah.
Three Max Wedge Dodges.
Are those any of the ones that are in your museum right now?
Yep. The red one is still there, and the black Max Wedge is still there.
Okay. So that's how
and
Mopar.
Then we also have the two Mr. Norm funny cars.
Yep. Also have the Mr. Norm funny cars, which.
So those were the race cars that were in the garage.
Yep.
Back in the day.
That I used to go see.
So that's why you have them.
Yeah, that's why I got them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I did not know that, and this is why I love this podcast, because I'm learning all these things, because I knew that you had those cars, but I didn't know who Mr. Norm was. Okay, so you guys have a museum full of these cars that are worth just, I know they're pretty good money, right?
Yeah, we got, I don't know, we must have about, 30 of them in there?
Pretty close.
Probably 30 original race cars.
I
mean, the Sox and Martin cars, the UFO car, I don't know.
Little Pro Stock cars that Greg Anderson, which is a current Pro Stock guy today, was an early mechanic on. All kinds.
What would you guys value those at? Are those things got value? I assume they must have some sort of value.
You take like the Sox and Martin, the Barracuda. I think at one time it's probably down now, but I think
they've all had their day, but they're down a little bit now.
Yeah. Sure.
But that Barracuda is probably 6.5, 7.5
back in the day.
Back in the day.
Have you driven that lately at all, or do they just sit now? Do they even have the oil in them anymore?
Oh, yeah. They run. Everyone starts up. In fact, after the auction, we'll get them all out and running again.
Every car
get some fresh
runs.
Gas. And
For those who are listening, if you haven't been to Remling or Muscle Cars Museum, it's something you got to see if you're in Winona area. And it's just a lot of history in there, a lot of really cool cars. And I think you actually have some cars from someone else's collection, don't you? Clark Rand?
Yes.
Who's Clark Rand?
He was another real big Mopar race guy.
Okay.
That... kind of a more of a historian, and he searched out a lot of these cars and found them and restored them, and then unfortunately he died cancer probably 3, 4, 5 years ago now,
probably 4 or 5 years
probably
ago
four or five
okay
years ago. Yeah, really
I mean
great
we
guy,
knew him
though.
Pretty good. I mean, great guy. And he come up to me one day and he says, I'd like to have all my cars in one spot, because he'd have some in Chicago, some in Missouri, where he lived, and they're all
he
over.
He set it up before he passed away to make sure that everybody could see the cars. And
there's even a nice neon sign back there that says the Clark Rand collection. Yep. That's
and he
pretty
knew
cool.
where they were at, and he knew they'd be displayed, and people could see them.
Sure.
That was his big thing.
So then are you originally from Winona?
Yep.
You are, okay. Yep. And then you moved down to Chicago.
I moved down to Chicago, lived with my grandma. And being 15, it's hard to get a job, but everybody thought I was out of school, so they thought I was 16. You had to be 16 to get a job.
Yeah, okay.
So I didn't tell them any different. My first job was at a drugstore stocking shelves and everything. And I worked at three Jewish guys owned these stores. And I was at the one, and we got robbed one morning. And
Yeah,
I'm in there stocking shelves, and this Puerto Rican guy walks in, and he's looking for some cologne, and he said, I forgot what kind it was. And I said, we don't have that kind. Well, he said, if you had it, I'd steal it anyway. So I said, well, that's fine. It ain't mine. I said, you can take it. Well, then walking around, and he said, what would you guys do if there's a robbery here? I said, oh, again, the money's not mine. You can have it. And so we're walking around, and we get up by the front counter, and he pulls out a 45 Luger.
Jeez.
And I go, he said, well, this is a robbery. I go, at first I kind of like, yeah, right. And then he showed me the gun, and I, well, he's real. And we had an Italian guy that ran the cash register behind the counter, and this Puerto Rican guy is trying to push the buttons and get the cash register open, and it was jammed. So he backhanded that little Italian guy, and that Italian guy hit one button, the door rings open. He grabs all the paper money and runs out the door, and we just opened that morning. So he only got about maybe $100 or something like that.
Sure.
So I called the boss. I said, hey, we just got robbed. He said, how much you take? I said, well, we just opened up. So it was like $100. He said, $1,000? No, I said, $100. He says, no, he took $1,000. And well, come to find out, their deductible was $500, and he wanted to make
$500. Oh.
I guess he took $1,000.
Yeah,
I
he said. Did.
And I worked there for a while, and then they transferred me up to another store on Milwaukee Avenue, and because they had problems up there. This was all Puerto Rican area that I lived in, so there was a lot of gangs back then.
Sure, sure.
And so I worked there for a while, and then from there, then I went up on North Avenue and worked at that place up there for a while. And
okay.
Then I was back and forth, and one summer I had 21 jobs. I worked at Peerless and knitting mills. I work at this place for 2 hours and break time to this place, and I worked at Fiberite, and I didn't like anything. And then my dad told me, you know, if you ever get married, you should probably have a full-time job. Yeah, I said, probably if I find out what I like.
Yeah. So then and, what did you end up finding out that you liked?
Well, I went on construction, and then it would rain, and you wouldn't work, and then it would snow, and you wouldn't work, and then I was on roofing. In fact, I roofed the old Penny's building and a Peerless chain building.
Yeah,
and an outfit out of Minneapolis. And then I thought, well, then the Vietnam War come up, and I said, well, I ain't going there neither. And they had the lottery out.
Yeah.
And so I was in Vo-Tech school. So if you were in Vo-Tech school back then,
yeah,
you didn't have to go. So it was $10 to go to school back then.
Yes, my dad said. He said it was 10 for registration, 10 for the yearbook or something like that.
$10. So I went and paid my $10, and I wanted to take mechanics because I like mechanical better, and I never knew a thing about body work. And so I started they said the mechanic was full, but we'll put you over in auto body. Yeah, that's fine. I don't care where I go because I wasn't going to the Army.
So yeah.
About three months goes by, and the lottery numbers came out for Vietnam. And I went at 10 o'clock break from school, and I went over here to Galt's and got a newspaper, and I looked, my number is 350-something. Well, they ain't going to call me unless we had war downtown, I said. So I quit. I didn't even go back to school. I quit right there again. And then I went on construction again and out, and then that's when I figured, I better get something steady. So I went back to school in the fall, and Mr. Lindstrom was my teacher. And I says, can I come back and pick up where I left off? Yeah, he said, come on back. So I was like painting. So I was back in there, and that was an 11-month course that we had. And I went back for about another 4 months. I don't think I had a total of 7 months in school. And the instructor come up and says, you know, if you want to go get a job, he says, we thought about everything we can to you.
Yeah, sure.
So he says, you go get a job. Well, then I went around town. And we had about 20 shops in town with dealers and independents. And nobody would give me a job. Yeah, you ain't got enough experience. You ain't got enough of this year. So I always had in the back of my mind, you know what? I'll be back and get you boys. So off to Chicago I went again. I lived with my grandma. I went to a Ford dealership. They had help wanted sign in the window. And I walk in, they had an Italian shop foreman in there. And he had about a 20-car shop. And I says, so you got a help wanted sign. I said, I'd like to get a job here. He said, what do you know? So I thought, this is pretty nice. I got my diploma, shows I did welding, I did frame straightening, I did painting, I did metal straightening and brazing and all whatever was required. And he told me, he looked at it, he said, well, he says, why don't you take that and put it where the sun don't shine? He said, he said, if you don't know what you're doing, I don't want you.
Sure.
And I said, and I was there like on a Wednesday or Thursday. And I said, what time you guys start work around here? He says, oh, we get here about 7:30. He said, we start about 8 o'clock. I said, you know what? I'll be here next Monday. I'm starting here next Monday. He said, I'm coming to work here, and I'm going to work here all next week. And if you like what I do, you keep me. And if you don't, you can get rid of me, and you won't owe me a dime.
Oh, that's a good way to get in.
So that's how I got my first job there.
Wow. So they wanted, like, real-world experience. How do you get it without actually having a job?
Yeah. No, I told them I'm starting here. That's what I told them. And I went there, and I had no issue. I worked there about, well, probably 6-8 months in there, and that was a dealership, a Ford dealership. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to get experience with independents. So down the road, there was three Jewish guys that bought insurance wrecks. And I went down there because back then I only got like 3 1/4 an hour is what they paid.
Yeah.
And so I went down the street and there's three Jewish guys and I walk in there and these three Jewish guys, you know, they all wear the hat and suits. I think they get them dry cleaned once every 2 years. So they wear the same suit all the time.
Sure.
And so I walk in and they're masking off. It was a 68 Chevy. I still remember the car, 68 Chevy four-door, kind of that banana yellow color. And I says, where's all your help? He said, we fired them, every one of them. And it was about a 20-car shop also. So I said, well, he says, can you paint? I go, yeah. And they're trying to, back then you used newspapers to mask off cars.
Yeah,
so these three guys are trying to mask these old fenders off. He says, can you paint this fender? We got it sold. Yeah. He said, how much you want? I says, give me $25. I'll stay and paint it. He said, we'll give you 10. I go, you know what? I'll stay for 20. And I'll do it for you. Okay, get it done. He said, we got to get it done.
Sure.
So I stayed, painted their fender, and then I started working there. I worked there probably, it was a real crap hole. And I worked there probably 6 months or so. And, it was so bad in there, depending on what end of the car you're working on, the roof leaked so bad, the water just poured in from the car. So if you're working on the back end, you'd have to turn it around so it wouldn't, so it wouldn't rain on. So I worked there for a while, and then my cousin lived down there, and he comes to me and he says, Hank's Body Shop over on Grand in Chicago, he says, looking for body guy. I just go find out what they're doing or what they want there. You know, by this time with school and the place I worked, I probably got, I don't know, a year and a half, year and 3/4, but I could do whatever was required, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, he goes over to this Hank's Body Shop. He's a Polish guy, and he had about four guys working in there. And the guy says, well, I need somebody with 5 years experience, and I pay $7.50 an hour if you got that kind of experience, and we need somebody. So he comes back and tells me that. And I go, okay. So after work one day, I stop over there, and I walk in, and I say, oh, I see you got a help wanted sign on your window. I says, what are you looking for? How much experience you got? A little over 5 years, I said, probably. And yeah, he said, and he took me to a shop. He says, I remember it was a Corvair hitting the front end, and all they had back then was posts in the floor to pull the front end. They didn't have no good frame equipment back then. And he says, can you do this? Yeah, I can do that. Can you paint? Yeah, I can paint. Can you do this and this? And he showed me around. Yeah, I can do it all. And what kind of money would you want? Well, I said, where I'm at, I'm getting $7 an hour, and I wouldn't trade for even money. Well, he said, we pay $7.50.
Oh, perfect.
So that probably worked. He said, when can you work? I said, well, I could probably next week maybe. So I go back to the other shop I worked at, and I told him, I got to run back up to Minnesota. My girlfriend's grandma's really sick, and we're real close, and I need to spend some time up there. So I need 2 weeks, I said, to go up there, and then I'll be back. And they said, well, you better come back. I said, yeah, I will. So that gave me 2 weeks to check out this other guy.
Oh, sure.
To see if it worked for me. And it did. Well, I was there about 6-7 months, and he walks in. I never had an issue with anything he wanted me to do. And he called me. He said, Jim, come in the office here, would you? So I walk in the office. You know, you lied to me. I go, lied to you? I don't even talk to you. Well, he said, you told me you were getting $7 an hour. I found out where you were. You're only getting like $5.50. So he said, I'm going to have to back you down. I said, you know what, Hank? I was looking for a job when I found this one. I'll go find another one. Thanks for the time.
Yeah.
So and I left there. And then that's when I come back to town. And I started working at home in the garage and doing work out there till the city run me out because I was in a residential neighborhood doing body work stuff. And so, and then I just kept going from there, renting a building and going on and on. So
that's one way of negotiating, I guess. So, Jimmy, then now how was school for you? Did you like school as much as your dad did?
I couldn't tell any of these stories. The wife said, you can't tell any of your stories until after they're out of school.
Okay.
I like school, but I mean, I worked all the time anyway, so it didn't really matter.
Now, you worked with your dad, right? Or did you have other jobs growing up?
No, I worked out at the truck shop most of the time. I worked there till we started Auto Collision when I was 17.
In high school?
Yeah, we were about a year into high school.
Okay.
So we started Auto Collision in the original building that they started, or that he did, had the original Jim's Body Shop in.
Okay.
Which is down by the truck shop. So we started that, and then once I graduated, then I went full-time in there.
Okay. What did you start off doing there then?
Everything.
Everything?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I... Yeah,
quarter panels?
Everything.
Sure.
Fenders, front ends, you know?
Yeah.
Paint, body work, all that.
Yeah. How is it like working with your dad? Is it challenging at all?
We didn't work together.
Oh, okay.
So I ran the shop as soon as I started, Auto Collision, and then he was across the street at the truck and trailer shop, so...
Okay.
Yeah, we hardly ever seen each other all day.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. I mean, we all both had our own job to do.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's interesting because I obviously work with my dad in the real estate, so sometimes we butt heads. Wasn't sure if you guys had the same situations.
No.
But if you're working in two separate...
Heads on anything,
never had an issue.
That's good to hear then.
Yeah. I mean, we... No, I don't think we've ever had a disagreement that I can ever remember.
Nice. Well, that's good.
Never.
Because it was basically a family business, right? I mean... Everyone from the most of the family works there. Because I know when I would take my stuff.
Yeah, two daughters still work there.
Sure. Yeah, I know when I would go out there, I would basically the whole family's there. So that's pretty neat and interesting. And so now that brings me up to my next thing is now you guys are into car auctions. And that's kind of the big thing that's coming up here next Friday and Saturday here in Winona. How did that come about? I mean, I know obviously your love for cars makes sense, but.
Well, S&G originally held the auctions out at the building.
Right, yeah. Spring Grove Auctions, for those who are wondering what S&G is.
So they rented that building, and everybody always assumed it was our auctions.
Well, I mean,
nobody ever really knew it was... I mean, they knew it was S&G, but they always thought that we were behind it or partners with it, which we never were.
Sure. You just rent it to him?
Yeah, rented
the building.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he pretty much just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, he was in it about 10 years they ran it. And Dave, who was our third partner in the auction, he come to me one day and says, JC, his wife don't want a minute no more. They got kids going into basketball and high school sports, and they spend a lot of time doing that.
Sure.
And she just said, we just don't need this. So they just pretty much shut it right down. And then Dave come to us and said, you know, what do you want to start an auction? I go, I've never been in an auction, but I don't know. It sounds interesting, a new challenge.
Sure.
So... we said, let's lay it out and see what it is. And we went through a few things for a month or so, and the three of us formed a partnership and started up. And it's been
4 years. This will be our fourth year.
It'll be your fourth year, yeah.
Being since you've bought out them?
We didn't buy them out. We started our own.
We started our own. We cleaned the slate. We didn't want none of their bad habits or nothing.
Sure.
We didn't take nothing that they had. No customers,
none
no nothing.
People.
Yeah, and none of their people or nothing, and started our own fresh. I told them if we're going to do it, we're going to take it to a different level.
Sure.
You know, and that's one thing the other guy wouldn't do was spend the money on the marketing and all that, which we're blowing money like drunken sailors.
Well, I guess you know, the funny thing is I'm scrolling through Facebook Marketplace and your ads are always popping up throughout there.
I mean, we got people calling us from cities and Hastings and... Well, this year, I mean, we've expanded. I mean, when they were in it, they probably did a radius, I don't know, maybe 50 miles or something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we got 20 cars alone coming out of Omaha, Nebraska for this one.
Sure.
We got cars coming out of Rockford, Illinois. We got a lot coming out of Minneapolis. We get a lot out of Iowa, and it just keeps kind of going like this every auction we have.
The furthest anyone's ever brought one from?
Sweden.
Oh yeah, yeah. We
saw Holy cow, Sweden!
All those convertibles last year that were inside.
Sweden. So how they?
Yeah, we had 11 cars from Sweden. They shipped over.
That's neat. So they got to ship it over on a
boat, container.
A
boat,
oh man, that must be a fortune.
And we also shipped out. I mean, we sold a container full of those Honda motorcycles. Went to Japan.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
That family up in Duluth, we sold all them cars, went to Belgium.
Yeah, Belgium. That guy bought all five of them in a row.
All five from an estate.
Okay.
Yeah. We sold cars in Germany. We sold cars in Finland. That old 56 Cadillac went to Finland. Yeah. That old pink
With the
thing.
Internet today, you can.
Oh, it's, you know what, the internet, with today with the internet, everything's just across the street.
Yeah, it just basically depends on your marketing now. It's not, I mean, you don't have to, if you have a great car for sale, it really doesn't matter who sells it, because if you market it right and the right person sees it, that's all it takes.
Right, yeah. What have you guys found to be the best marketing strategy? Is it Facebook? Is it
social media?
Just social media in general. I mean, we do a lot on Facebook. But
national magazines, though.
Yeah, national mag. People still, the older generation still uses the magazines.
Yep.
Hemmings Magazine and
okay.
I mean, just Old Car Weekly, Sports Car Market. I mean, just yeah. We really have to have a mix of everything.
Sure,
we're probably in about 10 magazines.
10 car magazines?
Yeah.
Are you in any like Motor Trend or any of those at all? Or is
not
it like,
Motor Trend. That isn't.
No, most of them are like classified ads for cars and stuff like that.
Yep. Well, that's pretty cool, because if people are bringing them from Sweden, that means someone's seeing whatever you're doing.
We sold everyone. In fact, we had a 59 DeSoto, which I thought probably would bring about 85 grand, maybe 100. And it was a 20-year-old restoration. We got 238,000 for that car.
Oh.
They bought it on the internet.
Bought it on the internet.
Someone bought it on the internet?
Yeah. An old guy from Minneapolis came down with two grandkids, put the top down, paid for it, and left.
Wow.
Drove it back home.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because if you have the right thing and the right person's out there wanting to buy, then it's hopefully going to be sold. And I'm selling two as well myself this year. So.
In every one of our sales, like this year, so normally we'll have 300 to 400, you know, bidders on site.
Yep.
And then we'll have our biggest sale we've ever had on auction day was almost 1,200 online bidders. So as of yesterday for this sale, we have 1,700 bidders online right now that are already registered.
That's good
news.
And
we still got a full week to go.
Yeah, that's good news to hear for those who are selling, for sure. Yep. Hopefully they'll get top dollar for it. And people are willing to just do it sight unseen. They just hope that it is what it is.
As long as you can describe it right. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing, is giving the best description.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, people think, well, you know, if they got a high dollar car, well, you can't sell this, and you know, because you're in a small town and all this year. Well, last year we had a family that had a 2005 Ford GT and an 89 Testarossa.
You may have seen that one.
I may have, because I was drooling on it. That was the thing.
That 89 slant nose Porsche and
Testarossa.
Testarossa and then a Cobra continuation. And people kind of thought, well, I don't know if they'll get this deal done. We went up to Minneapolis, looked at that collection. We told the family, you're probably going to get about $1 million out of the collection.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote them a check for $968. That's how close we hit it.
That's pretty good then. So you know your valuations then, at least.
Well, I mean, we hit them really close. I mean, yeah, we don't miss it by much.
So people actually come to you and say, hey, what do you think I might be able to get for this?
Yeah. Well, that's right.
Everybody kind of wants a ballpark.
Sure.
And some people don't want to hear what you tell them, but, you know, I tell them, I ain't going to give you no bull. I said, I'm going to tell you what it's worth, whether you like it or not. This is what it's worth, you know.
Well, that's the same in the housing market, though, too. You tell someone, they get offended, too.
And, yeah, and well, same thing. You know, and then they, what I was going to say,
like to say, most of the time on those high-priced cars, the first sale, we price it for them.
Yeah.
Second sale, we sell it for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, that's been reality for a lot of people.
The other problem is, a lot of them bought them during COVID, which people spent stupid money. And the market has dropped down. I was just reading another auction book the other day, and across the board for heavy equipment, construction equipment, dump trucks, all that kind of stuff, is down 18 to 20% across the board.
Oh, don't tell me that.
That's what it is.
It's just, I mean, the collector cars are no different than the stock market. I mean, you can see when when stock markets start to fall, you can see the collector market rise.
Yeah.
You can see people running.
Yep.
You know,
there's different ways of getting something possibly in return. And I mean, I have had people on here with sports cards, and people are playing dumb money for a little piece of cardboard, which is crazy.
Yep.
They'll pay a couple $1,000s for a piece of cardboard. So you're right though. You're right. It's just a different, something of different value.
And the trends of cars come and go.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, in our heyday, when our like 64s and 5s and 3s, you know, we're worth 150, 160, 70,000 a piece.
Yeah.
You know, those cars now today are probably 75
to 100.
80, 90.
Yeah.
So they've cut in half.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
But It's just a cycle.
So is this a, when is there a lot of behind the scenes work that nobody sees?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
If you see behind, we make it, we always tell everybody, make it look easy up front.
Well, yeah, it does look easy. Yeah.
But behind the scenes, it's chaos.
Sure.
A lot of work.
I mean, it's a lot of work.
And is it chaos the days of or leading up to it?
It's chaos starting last week.
So the week up to or 2 weeks up to it, roughly?
About 2 weeks. Two weeks out there, and then about a week after by the time we get everything out of there. And
what's the big thing that's like just like a pain in the ass?
Well, like Saturday, you know, we got 3 days to haul in 300, check in 300 cars.
Sure, sure.
VIN check them, get them in, loaded in computers, make sure the descriptions are right, make sure the titles are clear.
Match the title with the frame and stuff.
The paperwork and the photos and, you know, arranging 300 cars in the parking lot. And,
yeah, right.
And 300 cars are, you've got, I think this year we'll have 15 drivers. 300 cars, you got 300 different ways to start each one of them out there. So
you're right.
And 150 don't have gas and dead batteries.
You have to.
I saw that. There's a fee if it's dead. It's like $125 fee if it's possibly dead. So I got mine charging up right now, just so you know. Should be no problem there when I come through.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of chaos going behind the scenes because, like you said, it does look easy when you're up there. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Got the bid. Great. Slap a tag. And then they just drive out. Like, oh, great. They just made a bunch of money. But then you got all the things leading up to it. What about afterwards? Is it chaos trying to get money out of people?
Everything has to be wired, so we don't have to worry about bad checks or anything like that.
Okay.
All the money gets wired.
You have to have a bank letter approval on
you have to be pre-approved to we're getting letters of credit now from people that are sending them in, so we know how far they can go
and, that's good
what they can do. And
well, and then I also saw that there's someone there that actually gives out loans for classic cars.
There's several of those at all the auctions. I think this is JJ Best.
Okay.
But even if you got a good credit score, there's probably still 9% or 10% or
interest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can they approve you on the spot for that?
Yep. Say they can approve you within 5 minutes. You call them and tell them, I want to buy this, and they get you in 5 minutes, you got your money.
Well, I've been looking at the cars that are coming through, and they look like they keep getting higher and higher end every single time.
Well, that's what we're trying. Yeah.
We got a really, really good group of cars this time.
So now when you guys first started off, you said, we're going to wipe the slate clean. We're going to do it differently. Did you follow the Barrett Jacksons, the Meekum style of things, or how did you guys come up with your way of doing your auction?
Not really. I mean,
it's just like when I got into the repair business for motorhomes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go after all the low end stuff.
Sure.
Because when times are tough, those people pull their horns in.
Yeah.
You get into middle and upper class. Well, right now the middle class is a little iffy, but go after. You got to work all day long, so you might as well go after the big guy.
Sure.
And there's always money there.
That's true. Yeah. There's sometimes less work when you're dealing with high end people because they've been there before and they have no problem doing it. Same with the housing market too. I mean, the higher end houses are the ones that are easier to work with.
Yep.
It's the low end ones that are rough. Yep. So for those who have not been there, you need to check out their website because you guys have literally built a small town as your backdrop for the auction and just for parties in general. And you can rent the place out too, right? So yeah, you guys got to check it out. And how did you come up with the concept of, hey, I'm going to take this building and I'm going to build a city in the background?
Never had that. And when I first bought that building, I was just going to put my cars in there and leave it closed.
Well, originally we were going to put like a park through there.
Yeah.
Because it looks so big.
Too, yeah.
It looks so big in there. We were going to make like sidewalks and kind of
grass, turf. We're going to put turf in there.
Yeah, and by the time we put all the cars in there, we didn't have
room to walk between them.
Nothing.
That's true. So what do you all have in your town there? Because it starts from left to right. And I think
there's a new one in there now that you haven't seen yet.
So I have not. No, you're right.
Train two.
Oh, yeah. The train's up there too. Yeah.
But train. Okay.
There's a Packard dealership.
Oh, yeah.
In there
my dad sent me a photo one day. That's pretty cool.
Oops. Yeah. We put a Packard dealership in there. There's two cars in there.
Bike shop,
barbershop, bank, and that bank is some of the original stuff out of the Bank of Dodge from 1916.
Right.
It's original furniture in there, or the cages.
Cages.
An old hot rod shop.
Yeah. You like to go around and get a lot of antiques, don't you? Like original stuff.
If I can find
it. If you can find it, yeah. Where do you go and mostly find that kind of stuff?
Don't tell them that.
Don't give away your secret. I mean, are you just going to antique shops, basically?
He's fishing for
information. Well, I'm just wondering if you just go to antique shops and it just happens to be there, or do you have to search for that specific?
We've been in the business
a lot of
so
times
long.
We just get calls.
Yeah.
Well, that's even better.
I was just going to say, we get, people call us and say, I got this or that. And
yeah. Some people have donated some stuff, some bikes and different stuff.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that. That's right. Some even in the bike shop, isn't that most of those bikes donated from? Well,
yeah, those are all.
That's another guy's bicycles. The bicycles are not ours.
Yeah.
But some lady, Minnesota Live on Channel 5, come down, did a deal on us. And some lady seen it, and her husband, when he was a boy, had a bicycle. His dad had a gas station in Minneapolis and sold Goodyear tires, and they gave away a brand new boy's Goodyear bike.
Okay.
And he had it all restored 30 years ago. And he called me, says, I got two kids or three kids, and I can't give it to one, and the other ones won't like it, so we're giving the bike away. So I was in Minneapolis one day, and I called them up, and they said, come on over. It was up in their attic. You know, it's probably a $2,500 bike.
Yeah.
And he said, pick it up and take it, get it out of here.
Sure. Well, yeah, I guess if people are calling you, that's the best thing because they want to get rid of it and probably get a better price than going to an antique shop trying to negotiate with them. So, yeah, look, you got a whole town in the background. The cars come through. The backdrop is sweet. I mean, I've watched Barrett Jackson. I've watched Meekum, and they're obviously going around to different towns. But if anybody comes, you need to come up and check it out because it's something to be seen. It's almost like a mini museum, I would say, just in towns. Now, do you hire that out, or do you guys build all that yourself?
No, I have a guy from Minneapolis come down, and he builds out for us. I give him a picture of what I want, and off he goes.
Wow. How long does it take him to build, like, just one little section?
Well, he just did that big Packer dealership, which is
about
45 feet long, probably 45 feet long and 20, 30 feet deep. That probably took him about 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Yeah, about 3 weeks.
The whole thing.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Are you going to put a car in there, like a Packard car?
There's two cars in there.
Oh, already?
There already.
Wow, I'm interested to see. I haven't been out there. I wasn't at the fall auction because I was on my honeymoon, so I wasn't able to make it out on that one. So last one I was at was last June, I guess it would have been.
And then the train, I wasn't in the trains, but a guy come to me and says, my priest has a train set, and he's been in the trains all his life, and his back hurts, and he don't want to do this anymore. He wants to sell these trains. Would you like to see him? So I said, I'll go take a look. So I went over to his house, and his one bedroom had boxes, and boxes of brand-new trains in boxes. He had 200 cars.
Sure.
And about 20 engines. And I got enough track to come downtown and go back out to my building. I mean, that's how much track he gave me.
Holy cow.
And I'm going, well, I was going to just build shelves and
display them
and that. And I thought, you know, I had an upper deck, and I said, you know what, I should build it so it looks like a train up there.
Yeah.
So I built, I had my guys build a Union Pacific passenger train. Mm-hmm. It looks like a real train sitting up there.
Yeah, my dad sent me a photo, and I go, I think that was the VIP lounge, or the VIP lounge before. So now is there any more seating up there? Or is it?
No, nothing. No, it looks like a train sitting up there.
Sure.
And then behind that, I'm trying to find somebody that knows how to do trains, and I'm going to, there'll be about a 20 foot long by 16 wide big train layout that you can go up there and play with.
Oh, cool. That's pretty neat. It's like your own little playhouse, this whole place. Because I remember what it was before. We'd go out to the back, and it was just like, I think, a boat sitting out there, some cars sitting out there, and that's all it was. And now it looks like a mini town. Yeah. It's the neatest thing if you haven't been out there. And I'll try to throw a picture on my Facebook and stuff so people can see what it looks like. So now when we have the auction next week, is it free to come in and just check out the cars, or is there an admission to come in?
It's $15 to come in.
Okay.
It's $15 to get in, and if you get a bidder's pass for $50, you get one of our commemorative cups and free beer till it runs out.
How much beer do you have? Enough for us?
Eight barrels.
So.
Oh, holy cow. That's a lot.
So
and if we need more, we'll get more.
Yeah.
So the idea is to liquor them up and make them bid more,
get them
right?
loose. Get them loose. And get your checkbook out.
Get your checkbook out. Does anybody still have a checkbook anymore?
You know, I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, that's really cool. So now you get a bid number. Can you go visit the museum at all?
No, we used to have it open, but it's just too much going on.
We don't
have
enough people to keep it open.
So I remember you guys used to donate the money, I think, to...
And we still give Freedom Honor Flight. We still we give them a chunk from the auction, and we have the honor guard there to open up for us, and the mayor of Goodview comes in and gives a little spiel. And
plus, we got half the cars that are ours that are in the back normally are all rolled up into the aisles, and
it's jammed. It's all jammed.
You can't get down the aisles.
Oh, okay. Because you had to move your stuff out of the back.
Right.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. So, the Freedom Honor Flight, that's my grandpa actually did that one time. I think it was his first time in an airplane.
We give a check every year for that.
That's really neat. And I think they just had a little car show at the Elks last week we went to and donated a few bucks to that. So that's nice because my grandpa actually utilized that and took a flight out to D.C. and back, I believe. And I think it was
same day.
Yeah, and it was his first time ever on a plane, if I remember right, when my dad told me. And he was in the Korean War, if I remember right. So that was interesting to see. So if you come out there, you got to have a bidder pass the bid. And then if you actually want a bid, you have to have a letter of
I think if they write a check, it holds till it clears, and then you get your title.
Some people will write a personal check, and then they'll wire transfer the money on Monday. Yeah.
So now, the guys that are there, the auctioneer and all those guys, do you just hire them for the weekend, or are they on staff of any sort?
We hire them in for the weekend.
We hire them for each auction.
Okay.
Our auctioneer, we got one out of Denver this year, one in Minneapolis. And our ring guys are where? Out of Eau Claire, Iowa.
Yeah, they're kind of all over the Midwest here.
They just all come in, they just get paid for those 2 days, and then they're all done. And then when you're done in the off season, I'm calling it the off season like it's sports, what happens? Anything happen in the off season, or do you just prep for the next one? Because you do two a year, one usually in beginning of June, one in beginning of...
Well, we just got a collection down in Omaha. We were just down there a couple weeks ago. We got a collection of Porsches.
Oh.
This guy passed away, and he's probably got 30 cars.
Yeah, this will be kind of a barn find Porsche collection.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, some old 350
parked for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Are those coming to the June auction or October?
Those will be just sell online.
Oh, just sell them online.
Yep.
Oh,
so we'll do our spring sale now, and then we'll do an online. Then we'll do that sale online.
Okay.
Midsummer, and then we'll hit our fall sale.
So
we're trying to keep our name out there all year instead of we did before was we ran the spring one and then everything's done.
Yeah.
Now we got to wait and start it all over. Well, now we want to keep it going so they keep. You know, keep in front of everybody.
So it's kind of like a mini eBay you want to kind of do just to keep... I mean, you can buy them or auction them?
No, we can't buy them. No.
No, I'm saying the people, you're trying to auction them off at the same time. Is that correct? Like, if they bring these cars, you'll send...
You mean the Porsches?
Yeah.
No, we're...
No, we got to go down there. We'll go down there, photograph them, catalog them. We'll do all the stuff. And then we'll have a couple days viewing where people can come down and actually look at them. And then we'll run the sale for 3 weeks. On bid to buy.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering. Online. So then it'll happen somewhere between two auctions.
Two. Yep.
Well, that's a good idea. Like you were saying, keep the people interested. Like, hey, we're still doing more, not just June and October.
Yeah, these are actually some pretty rare Porsches.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, live sales, we'll only do two, and then we'll hope to have like these estate type deals.
Yep, okay.
Three, four, maybe a year.
And I see you have memorabilia going through this year, and I was seeing some of those, and I'm itching for, I love memorabilia, that's autographed. So I saw that you got a lot of that actually coming through this time. And you guys also sell some of the neon signs similar to the ones that are hanging up in the background for those who are watching on YouTube. I
think our last sale, what do we have, like 300 pieces?
Yeah, this will be our last sale with autograph memorabilia.
Yeah.
This will be your last one?
Yeah. With the autograph stuff.
Okay, you're not doing that anymore?
No. The guy, how many pieces?
It's too much work, but the guy that actually supplies that with us out of California has over 90,000 autograph pieces.
Whoa. And we can have as much as we want, but we can sell a car at the same amount of time we can sell a picture.
Sure, sure.
We make, $10 on the picture or 10,000 on the car.
Right, yeah. Like you said, go for the bigger pieces before.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. What's if someone were to sell, do you see a better return on the June one or the October? Does it matter at all?
Spring sales usually, I don't know. They're
both pretty close.
Yeah, they're horse apiece.
Yeah. Well, I guess as someone that...
The only thing, it's harder to get cars in the spring because a lot of people still have them in storage.
Sure.
It's hard to get photos. It's hard to get
real
early. But in fall, a lot of people want to get rid of their car or they want to flip it for another one.
Yep.
So sometimes in the fall, we'll get more cars because they don't want to store them.
Yeah, and the one thing I always think is if I'm going to buy some sort of nice car or a car that I'm going to drive, I want it before the summer starts so I can enjoy it rather than October where I got to wait to enjoy it.
Yep.
And so every time I get a car, I just take it down to the lake and I take all the nice photos of it. So if I ever do want to sell it, they're already on my phone ready to be there. That's how I did it. So I think the photos I sent in were like from when I first bought it 3 years ago. Not that the car's changed at all, just the mileage had changed. But what's the biggest sale you've ever had? Like, is there one that's just like way above everything?
I think our best sale ever was almost $5.5 million.
Yeah.
Was it that one?
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was?
No, that was a total sale.
No, I meant like one car that went through.
Oh, you mean the car? Oh, I thought you meant total. No. Total. Well, we sold I mean, on average, that GT was four, ended up, I think, with commission about 415, was
yeah,
that one?
Yeah, 415,000.
Nice.
And we had sold a couple, one of the Cadillacs I restored, we had sold after the sale. That one also brought 415. That went to Texas.
Nice.
But probably in that $400,000 range.
That's yeah. That's pretty darn good. And then you said your biggest total has been like over 5 million.
Yeah.
So is there like, do you see a percentage of this is what our sales are? We're going to sell this percentage most likely 80, 90%.
No, we'd like to, no, 68 to 72% yeah. Okay. is a good sale for us.
For any auction yeah. company.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Some people got their stuff overpriced or,
right.
or you know. Yeah.
And if you have a reserve on it, you have the right to take it off anytime you want.
Up there, yep.
Sure.
Let's say if you had a car for $100,000 and we only got $90,000,
yeah.
and my reserve is $100,000, well, you can say, you know what, drop it, I'll sell it for that.
Yep.
So you can do that at any time.
Yep.
Now, do you guys do a preview day before the auction? Is there a day you can come
we
in?
We used to do it, but
it's too. We use our last because we have Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday to get 300 cars placed out in the lot.
Okay.
It's really chaos.
Sure.
So we use Thursday kind of as our cleanup day.
Yep.
Just to get all of our last little things done, everything set, all the run order done, and it just doesn't work out. So we open up at 8 o'clock on Friday morning, so they have about 2 hours of preview before the
okay.
auction actually starts.
That's yeah.
And we do have some people that come in, like we have somebody coming tomorrow to look at the Shelby. People that'll actually call us ahead, like that big motorhome we have, that big Renegade
yep.
this year.
I saw that sitting out there.
Yeah, I had a family come down. They spent 2.5 hours in that thing.
Wow, they must be interested.
And so we'll do individual ones like that.
Yeah, if anybody wants to come look at my stuff, that yeah, they are more than welcome to come see it. I'll show them. I'll give them a preview day. So how long does the auction? It starts at what? About 9 o'clock?
9:30.
9:30 and yeah, goes till.
My memorabilia starts at 9:30.
Okay.
Car, we get in the car, yeah, 4:30. We like to be done between 3:30 to 4:30.
Is there a lot to do between Friday and Saturday night, like after all said and done, or is it kind of like...
Clean the place up, rearrange yeah. the chairs.
Okay.
Yep, clean it.
Empty the garbage.
Get the next lineup in line for the next day, and then we're pretty much done. Like to get the guys out of there, because it's a long day when you're hustling those cars.
Yeah. Through. And do the guys just stay in town at a hotel somewhere? And
well, most of our guys are local.
Oh,
except for our auctioneers and all that, they stay at a hotel.
Sure.
But you're kind of interested. We had some people call the last couple of days that want to come here out of Iowa, Nebraska, wherever, and they're telling us there's no rooms.
Yeah.
Everything's taken. All the hotels are telling them there's an auction in town, there's no more rooms.
Oh, so it's getting that big.
They're calling all the small hotels and everything. In fact, a couple of people even called Fountain City.
Shipping to La Crosse.
Yeah, they're going to La Crosse right now.
Oh, sure. Well, I guess that's not that bad of a drive. It's 25 minutes. But they haven't checked in the Sterling Motel yet?
No. We leave that for last resort. We leave that one for the bottom feeders.
That are dragging cars through at that point. So now I want to go on to, for our last portion here, we've been going for a little over an hour. You guys are big car guys. What's your favorite car that you've ever had, Jim? And then, Jimmy, I want to know what your favorite car is that you've ever had or that you want to have, I guess. Is there like a dream car? Because my dream car was that GT40 going through at $300,000 or $400,000. So that would have been,
as a kid, that 64 Dodge would have been my favorite car.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I always wanted. But I mean, today,
there's so many.
We got so many to drive now. And we got the Viper to drive. We got Ferrari to drive. We got, muscle car to drive. We got,
yeah.
We got,
I mean, all race car wise, I think. Both of us that are 64 Dodge.
Yeah.
We got a red 64 Dodge out there we had for, how long we had that?
That'd be 20-some years, ain't it?
Oh, it's probably more than 20 years.
But that's aluminum front car, Hemi original. They only made about
55
of them cars.
Okay. Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
So, and you guys still have that one, you said, yeah. And we talked about that earlier, right? That was the same car.
Yeah.
And red?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one. So, yeah, and you have a Dodge Demon, don't you? You still have that?
Yeah.
You like that one?
Yeah, I love that car.
Does that have the 1,000 horse?
No, those are 840.
840.
Yeah, 840.
But then you've got the drag pack, though, too, which is just
the drag pack is the red, white, and blue one.
Okay.
Yeah, so that
one. Well, yeah, I remember that one. I'm talking about the clay gray one, I guess.
That's almost 1,300 horse, ain't it?
Yeah, those they claim they're 1,100 to 1,200 horse, and there's only 50 of those built.
Sure. So that you, I mean, your Viper, I love the Viper. That's the one I've
had that since 97.
Oh, you bought it new? Or close.
400 or 500 miles on it.
Yeah, sure. I think there was 700 miles on it.
Something like that.
Yeah, the blue with the white stripes.
That was actually our, other than our, that was our first, really our first one that we started, when we started collecting cars. That was our first car we
bought. When my dad first started collecting cars, there was the 2002 Thunderbird next to you, that black one. That one, and then it went to the 55 Chevy sedan delivery. And it's just kind of taken its own.
He's had that car a long time.
Yeah, I remember when he bought that.
I bought, I was like, I think I was a sophomore in high school. And when he bought that one, I was an eighth grader. So he's had that one for a long time. That one's got like 5,000 miles on it. And he's just scared to drive it at high speeds because the tires might have dry rot, he said. Like, yeah, that probably makes sense. But it's been sitting in here, so who knows? Yeah, so like one of my, I guess one of my favorite cars to drive is the Supra. And it's the Japanese, you know. I know you guys are more probably the American, but I'm kind of like everything. It's just a matter of what
I like.
Are.
I like all cars too, but kind of partial to the Dodges.
Yeah. You know. Well, you have a Viper, or not a Viper, a Ferrari.
Yep.
So how did you decide to get a Ferrari?
Well, we sold some neon signs to a guy down La Crosse, and he says you
wasn't the guy here in Winona. Wasn't this guy the neon?
No,
my dad.
No. We sold some signs to a guy in La Crosse, some neon signs. He says you want to go with me and help deliver them. So I said, yeah, I'd go down. So we went down there, and the guy had to move out his dad's Bentley convertible.
Darn it.
New one. Yeah. And then he had
two Ferraris.
And he had two Ferraris. He had to move them out. And I thought, wow, that sounds pretty cool. And he goes to be sitting there. I said, nah, that's fine. The guy says, no, go ahead and just sit in it once. He said, ah, okay, I said. So I sit in it. And it really felt good. And he said, every guy's supposed to have one of these. I said, well, okay, yeah. So I got out, thought nothing of it. So halfway back home, I said, well, if everybody's supposed to have one, I should get one.
Sure.
And then so I told him, find one. So we found, I think he found one in Chicago, one in New York, and one in...
This one came out of Fort Lauderdale. The 458 came out of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, Fort Lauderdale Ferrari down there. So I said, so he found one and called the guy down there. And I said, if you can, and that was about a week before the car show, or the same week.
It was, we had to get it. It got delivered the day of the car, or day before the car show.
I said, if you can get it here before the car show, I said, I'll take it. Otherwise, I don't want it.
Sure.
He said, it'll be there. And then, so the guy come up like 2 days. They drove up from Florida and delivered it with a trailer.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know how to start it up or drive it. So he got in and showed me how to drive it and shipped it and everything else. And then after that, well, then we just bought another one. This summer, Debbie bought one.
Okay.
She got a California T turbo car, which is a really nice car. And they're just neat to drive.
Is it different than like the Viper? Is it a totally different feeling?
Oh, yeah. They're a lot tighter. Everything's really, really tight, though.
Yeah.
Like steering, suspension, just everything?
They're pretty...
I mean, it's like a race car.
Yeah,
I mean,
the Viper's not really sloppy, but it's... I mean, they feel really loose.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're... where the Ferrari is really, really responsive.
It sucks the road. I mean, it hugs the road.
Okay. Yeah, and that's the Supra does the same thing. Obviously, it's not a Ferrari, but you can definitely tell the difference between the Challenger, the Mustang, and the Supra. Just totally different.
That's car's made for it. They got like a tuned suspension.
So now your wife has one.
Yep.
So you guys going to go to Ferrari get-togethers?
No.
Or do you guys drive them separately and go places?
Yeah. Well, no. We just either take either one.
Well, okay.
Hers is a convertible or hardtop.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a black one, black interior. I mean, really nice. She had that 98 SL500, and there was nothing wrong with the car. And I said, you know, sell it, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, I took it to the auction. I sold it. So she said, well, you need to get me something else now. Well, then we looked on Chicago, and the Ferrari dealer down there had this one.
Okay.
And some guy traded it in. Or, no, he had it on consignment because he was looking to get a different one. So it was there 3-4 months, and I called the guy and I made a deal with him, and they delivered up the next day.
Nice. So. Now, Jimmy, is your wife into any of the car stuff much or not?
Not really. No.
No.
And my daughters never were either.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that one of them's in gymnastics, right?
At
the University of Minnesota.
Yeah. She's all done now, but she's just kind of waiting to get into dental school. And
okay.
But no, they were never got into cars.
All right.
You're into sports stuff.
Sports.
Well, you know, you're into sports when you're younger, and then eventually it might turn over to something else. I mean, I was into sports all my life, still am, but I found other interests now that I'm a little older, like the podcasting thing. This is a lot of fun for me, and then the cars, the community of just people around the car community is kind of fun, I think. I was just like BSing with people. Yep. So, yeah, and then we got the Steamboat Days car show coming up, which you kind of made bigger than it was. I remember that.
Yeah, we did it for 13 years.
Well, you know, the first time I remember doing it, it was down by the lakes, and it was just one row of cars. And I was in high school. Yeah. And then
that's when they stopped us one day. We were there, and they stopped us. I don't know if we'd get involved with it. And I don't know. We said, yeah. You know, and we told them, let's get T-shirts away, and let's do whatever. We can't even collect $100. I said, I'll show you how to collect money.
Yeah.
I think that first show we collected, I don't know, $1,800 or $2,000, and I bought all T-shirts and gave them away. And then the next year, I mean, it just kept growing. When I got done with it, it was collecting about $38,000 a show I could get.
Sure.
But I put on a big party.
Yeah, I know.
I put on a big party. I had bands downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, I had, T-shirts, all that kind of stuff. And
it also gets to a point where with car shows is... Yeah. After 13 years, what else can you do?
We brought cars out of Florida. Our buddies down there would haul cars up here.
Yeah.
Like all the race
cars. I remember that, yeah.
All the race cars. We had
Kindig. We had Kindig here.
Kindig here.
Yep, I remember Dave. Yeah. Got a picture with him.
And we had funny cars out of Minneapolis come down and fire them up downtown. And
yeah.
So, I mean, we had good connections and running some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going strong. I mean, we don't have that kind of stuff down here anymore, but I mean, we had that pre-show car party. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of
our last party we had 425 people there for the sponsors party.
Yeah, that was always fun. Then you actually opened this place up for the after party, which now we're starting to do because people are already down here. Yep. Last year we had a guy so drunk down here, he was talking to the mannequin back there. He thought it was real. He's up there with the arm around the mannequin. I don't know where he came from, but boy, we had fingerprints on just about every car back there, but he was just drunk out of his mind talking to it. So, anything else you would like to add to about the auction at all? I mean, it's coming up. It should be huge, I think. How many cars do you have coming this year?
Tell you what, if you watch it on TV and you think it's exciting watching on TV, come and see it live. I mean,
that's way better.
I mean, we got the lights and we got the noise. It's a big party. I mean, for $15, you can't buy cheaper entertainment for all day.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can't
do. It's supposed to be a nice weekend, mid-70s and partly cloudy, so it should be really nice.
It's like a big car show, $15 to see 300 car show.
Yeah. Yep. Is that how many cars you have coming, three?
We got about 280 right now, I think.
Yeah, we got a bunch that are going to be dry. We'll hit 300 for sure.
Sure. And then will all the memorabilia be sitting out for everyone to preview and look at?
Yep.
See, that's cool, too, for some people that might not be into cars, they might be into memorabilia, and I'm into that too. Yep. So that'd be cool to see memorabilia that's autographed. I saw you got like an Eminem one there, the rapper Eminem.
Yep.
I saw that was just on there because I was looking at how my car is doing on the online auction, the pre-auction. So I was looking at that and I was scrolling, like, oh, Eminem. That might be an interesting piece to have if it goes.
We had some pretty neat stuff there. We had like Marilyn Monroe. Wow. God, I can't think of everybody we had, but wrestlers and.
There's a lot of neat stuff.
Just a lot of Hollywood stuff.
Looks like everything, the more and more keeps getting added every day. Because I go on just about every day and check out how my cars are doing. And then I'm also looking at what's kind of been added as well.
We've got about 25, 30 pieces of that.
I think so.
Yeah.
So anyways, if you're in Winona or even if you're out of town, you should come check it out. $15 just to come observe. If you want to be a bidder, $50, you get unlimited beer until it runs out.
Yep.
8 kegs, right?
Yep.
Perfect. I'll drink 7 of them and then everyone else gets the rest. And then, it's next weekend. Friday it starts and then Saturday as well. And the cool thing that I think that you guys do, it, which makes it so much more official, is you guys have the national anthem beforehand.
Yep.
I think that makes it just...
We have the color guard.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have the color guard come and do their opening ceremony and then the national anthem. And
just makes it seem so much more official
and
when that happens.
And then we take off from there.
That's really neat.
And she's hammered down.
It's hammered down, yeah, because there's a lot of cars going through.
Some of them guys on the block, they're there all day long hollering and hammering, and they don't take a break.
Yeah. And I noticed, I think some of your family is also working the auction, too.
Pretty much all of us do.
Yeah. Wow, that's really neat that everyone comes
putting stickers on or selling hot dogs or
selling nuts in the nut shack. You got Tanner selling nuts and hot dogs, and it's a whole family affair out there. But it's really cool of how you kind of build it up because just me noticing, because I've been there since day one, I just noticed it keeps seeming like it's higher and higher class, getting more and more out there to the rest of the world. So if you're not coming, you should come and just observe. If anything else, it's just kind of a fun weekend in my mind. It's a whole weekend thing coming. Is $15 get you in for both days?
No,
each day.
So it's 30 if you want to go to both days. And you can go online and you can look at their website.
Or you can buy a bidder's pass for 50. You don't have to bid, but you can buy a bidder pass for 50. And
still get this.
Get beer and you get a guest pass with it. So
Oh, so you can bring someone with you.
And that's good for both days.
Oh, well, that's the way to go. That's the value.
That's the best way to do it.
So you can come for both days, get the unlimited beer, and bring a guest with you.
Right.
Okay, that's good. And then what's the website if people want to go check it out?
Remlinger Collector Car Auctions.
.com?
Yeah. Yep. You just hit Remlinger Cars and it'll pop right up.
Sure. Yeah, it's a really cool place. So yeah, come on out next weekend. For those who are available, I'll be out there. They'll obviously be out there, and it should be a fun weekend. Beautiful weather, like you said. And anything else you guys want to add?
No, we just got a couple cars that already met reserve on there. We got a Mustang on there. I think I told you. One guy wanted like $5,500, and it's up to $12,000 already.
Ooh, he's over double his money. Yeah. That's good.
And there was a couple deals on there like that. But, you know, the bidding started about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Something like that.
We're going to have a pretty good sale.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that sounds great. So for those who are out there or in town or somewhere nearby, come check it out. Or you can go online and check it out. There's an online bidding portion if you'd like to do that. But this has been another episode of Brews and Crews. I want to thank Jim and Jimmy for coming on out here, talking about cars, auctions, their life stories. And if you want to subscribe, go on YouTube. You can watch this. Or if you're on Spotify, Apple, we're on all of those major platforms as well. So I am going to give this a big cheers, and we'll see you next week.